Hello and welcome to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Dr. Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. And produced in the studios of WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. I'm Jeff White. This is edition NWS 803 for release on Sunday, July 14th, 2024. On WaveScan today, the SS Malolo and Captain Dobsey, the challenges of modern QSL collecting, and our Philippine DX report. This week's feature story was written and researched by Jan van Heeren in the Netherlands and was forwarded by Dr. Martin van der Ven in Germany to our editor-in-chief, Adrian Peterson. We thank each of those for bringing this story to our attention. If you have an interest in the history of radio, and more specifically, in the history of offshore radio in particular, it's always welcome when something new emerges from the distant past. This certainly applies to the broadcasts made in 1931 from the ocean steamer SS Malolo. Here's Ray Robinson in Los Angeles to tell us more.
Thanks, Jeff. As far back as the 1930s, several examples are known of radio broadcasts made from ships, including the SS City of Panama off the coast of Southern California with medium wave station RXKR from May till August 1933, and the MV Canimbla, which broadcast on shortwave from international waters off the Australian coast from 1936 to 1939. Well, we can now add to the list the SS Malolo, a name that appeared in old radio magazines of 1931, such as Broadcast Weekly and Radio Doings. The story actually starts in 1926, when the ocean steamer and cruise ship, the SS Malolo, was launched in Philadelphia. It was a very luxurious ship that sailed the routes between San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Honolulu, and long before commercial air flights were available, it contributed to the popularity of Hawaii as a tourist destination. Soon after entering service in 1927, the ship collided with a cargo ship, causing damage similar to that of the Titanic 15 years earlier. But due to a well-functioning compartment system, the ship was able safely to enter port under its own power, albeit with 6,000 tons of seawater on board. It was not only the Malolo that saw the light of day in 1926. The radio program Ship of Joy also started in that year at radio station KPO San Francisco, daily between 8 and 9 o'clock in the morning, with the exception of Sunday. This show was, apart from on KPO, also heard on a large number of other stations in syndicated form on the west coast of America. Ship of Joy was an imitation of an already existing popular program, Maxwell House Showboat. The new program was presented by Hugh Barrett Dobbs. He already had radio experience, especially as a presenter of a morning gymnastics program, and those gymnastics shows, sponsored by Quaker Oats, were very popular. Ship of Joy also became a sponsored program. Initially, the company Del Monte was a sponsor, and after that it became Shell, which changed the name of the show to Shell Ship of Joy. The program was broadcast via the NBC Pacific Coast Network. The popularity of the program was shown by the salary Dobbs received. It was said to be more than President Hoover's. In the period from 1929 to 1932, he collected almost $250,000 US dollars through Shell. Another indication of his popularity was that Dobbs received almost 2 million letters from listeners in 6 years. The listeners of Ship of Joy were called Shipmates or Happy Timers, and Dobbs himself became Captain Dobsey. The two events of 1926, the launching of the SS Malolo and the start of the radio program Ship of Joy, would come together a few years later. At the beginning of 1930, a top man of Shell, E.H. Sanders, thought it would be nice to have the program Ship of Joy actually broadcast from a ship for once. It took almost a year and a half before everything was complete in terms of technology, permits and finances. But finally, on Saturday, July the 11th, 1931, the SS Malolo left the port of San Francisco through the Golden Gate in the direction of Honolulu, Hawaii. During this voyage, Captain Dobsey would take care of his morning program, Shell Ship of Joy, every day from the ship. As it left harbour, the ship was waved off by thousands of listeners. On board were, among others, Captain Dobsey, two radio technicians, 20 artists, and a large number of fans of the program. A temporary radio studio was set up on the ship. A 200-watt shortwave transmitter had been installed, and it was assigned the call letters WIOXAI. It was authorised to broadcast on 6020 and 9670 kHz, having already been tested during an earlier voyage. The transmissions were then relayed over the entire NBC Pacific Coast network. At the time, the press reported that it was the first time in the history of radio that a seafaring radio station had provided regular broadcasts during a voyage across the Pacific Ocean, with these broadcasts being distributed via a network of radio stations. On Thursday, July the 16th, 1931, the ship arrived in Hawaii. There, the mayor welcomed Captain Dobsey and ceremoniously handed him the key to the city of Honolulu. From Hawaii, the broadcasts continued, but not as one would have liked from the Malolo, but simply from land. But yet again, this was not so commonplace, because these were the very first broadcasts from Hawaii aimed at the American mainland. On Friday the 17th, not only the morning program Shell Ship of Joy was broadcast there, but there was also a special evening broadcast with local artists. On Saturday the 18th, the return journey was commenced, with the ship again being waved off by thousands. On the way back, the program Ship of Joy was again broadcast daily. So how did the story end? Well, the Malolo was thoroughly rebuilt in 1937. During the Second World War, she was requisitioned and later returned to the shipping company. In 1948, the last trip to Hawaii was made with the ship, which then came into Italian hands. In 1977, in a Greek shipbreaking yard, the demolition started of the Queen Frederica, a name that it bore since 1954, after the then Queen of Greece. Surprisingly, all the companies that sponsored the programs of Dobbs nearly 100 years ago still exist today, which is quite remarkable: Quaker, Del Monte, and Shell. After the broadcasts via the NBC Pacific Coast Network, Shell Ship of Joy was broadcast for a period by the Columbia West Coast Network and then by Como, Seattle. At the end of each broadcast of Ship of Joy, Captain Dobsey asked the listeners to put their hand on their heart, and he made the following request: "Send out a wish to somebody somewhere who may be in sickness or trouble. Everybody, wish." Dobbs was concerned about the health of others, but he didn't know that his own health was bad. It was in 1944 that perhaps the wealthiest radio presenter in the world suddenly died. Sadly, Captain Dobsey was only 50 years old at the time. Back to you, Jeff.
Thanks, Ray. Next week, Ray Robinson will be bringing us the story of radio broadcasting in and from the Balkan country of Albania. From Italy, Antonello Napolitano sent us the latest edition of his electronic DX newsletter called DX Fanzine. It's actually been around since 1999, although there was a long gap until 2015, and it's been published continuously since then. The July 2024 edition includes medium wave and shortwave loggings, QSL review, a feature about a medium wave station in Rosario, Argentina, and Italy on Medium Wave, a list of all active medium wave radio stations in Italy, complete with contact information for each one. One of the best things about DX Fanzine is that it's completely free of charge. You can receive it each month by email, or you can access it online at www.dxfanzine, that's DXFAN. Z-I-N-E, or Z-I-N-E, .org. Once again, that's www.dxfanzine.org. At that site, you can find the current edition of the newsletter, as well as previous editions going all the way back to 1999. Thanks, Antonello, for telling us about this free publication. Joseph Jacob sent us the latest edition of the Asian DX Review from the Indian DX Club International, which has an interesting article by Pradip Chandra Kundu about the challenges facing QSL hunters in this modern era. I'd like to read it for you, as I'm sure many of you listening are QSL hunters or have been in the past. Pradip says, QSL collection is a very important and interesting part of the hobby of radio DXing. When you listen to a faraway radio station, you'll try to have a proof or recognition from the authority of the concerning station that you've listened to their broadcast. Such proof of recognition are known as QSLs. In earlier days, almost all stations had QSLs in the form of a beautiful picture card or by a letter, and those were sent by post. Most of DXers tried to collect these QSLs, as many as possible and from as many stations or countries as possible. This was considered to be a parameter of success for a DXer. Needless to say, there had always been a healthy competition going on among the DXers to increase their QSL tally in terms of numbers, stations, or countries. The scenario has changed quite a bit, though, since then. During the time of the Cold War, there had been a race between the two superpowers to expand their radio network system worldwide. They were trying to reach more and more people around the globe, influence them with their ideology, political stands, etc. Not only the USA, and then the USSR, with their respective allies, but also China, Cuba, Germany, the two Koreas, and many other countries also tried to reach a maximum number of listeners with the help of powerful shortwave transmitters. Even so, many relay bases were established in different parts of the world to make sure that nobody remained out of the coverage area. Those were the golden period for radio DXers. They had numerous shortwave stations to explore and also to collect QSLs by sending reception reports. But from the end of the 20th century, with the rapid spread of Internet, things started changing everywhere. One after another, shortwave stations began to close down. Many prominent stations like Radio Netherlands, Radio Moscow, Radio Canada International, Radio Sweden, and others gradually went off the air. Even top broadcasters like the BBC, the Voice of America, and Deutsche Welle also reduced their shortwave transmissions drastically. They dismantled many of their relay bases scattered around the globe. As a result, the opportunity to collect QSLs for the DXers from more stations or countries became very difficult. If you compare the current edition of the World Radio TV Handbook with an old edition from 1980 or 1990, you'll easily understand how much shortwave stations have vanished during this period. In those days, almost all countries had a shortwave transmission facility, even possibly with a less powerful transmitter. Also, they were very eager to receive reception reports from faraway listeners. Not only beautiful QSL cards, they would also send out various promotional items to the listeners. But alas, now a QSL hunter can do nothing but lament over this. However, in my opinion, says Pradip, a genuine QSL hunter can never sit idle, whatever problem comes his way. He must have a fighting spirit always. He would always try to explore the possibilities of listening to more and more new radio stations, submit correct reception reports to each of them, and collect a QSL confirmation. That's why, despite the disappearance of more and more shortwave stations, he will have to keep searching new stations on medium wave and the FM band or other available modes. Stations are now gradually switching to podcasts from broadcasts. They're trying to reach a maximum number of listeners around the globe with the help of a mobile app rather than using a traditional transmitter. Radio Belarus and Bulgarian radio are good examples of this. So, as enthusiastic listeners, we must support them. We must adapt to the new changes in the radio world. This is the call of World Radio Day, too. I wonder, when I see someone laugh at or make mockery of a QSL when it's obtained by listening to a station with an SDR, software-defined radio, is listening to a station with an SDR something unethical or to be guilty about? If I can listen to a rare station with any SDR and send the concerning station an honest report, and the station gladly confirms with a QSL, what is the problem of any third person? It is solely the prerogative of a station authority whether they would accept an SDR reception report or not. Yes, you can have a different view, but you can't humiliate anybody for listening with an SDR and obtaining a QSL thereby. Further, if we remain strictly adhering to our older ideology, we'll almost have no scope of QSL collection left. QSL policies of the stations are also becoming a big challenge to QSL hunters day by day. Many stations are getting reluctant to issue QSLs these days. China Radio International was always very prompt in responding to listeners' reception reports, but recently they're not showing so much interest in issuing a QSL. Printed QSLs are at present limited to just a few stations. Radio Taiwan International, KBS Korea, NHK Japan, TRT Turkey, Radio Free Asia, Transworld Radio, All India Radio are still responding with printed QSLs. But stations like Radio Romania International, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Prague, Radio Filipinas, AWR, FEBC, who were once well known for printed QSLs, now are gradually changing to eQSLs. To avoid the burden of huge postage cost and manpower, eQSL has become the fashion of the day. We will have to accept it. One positive aspect with eQSLs is it has no risk of getting lost in transit, and sometimes it's received promptly. Present postal service, at least in my area, is most deplorable. No ordinary mail item or letter has been received at my home address for so many years. Only registered letters or packets were able to find their way. So eQSL has saved us a lot from this frustration. There may be many different requirements of many different radio stations for issuing a QSL. We'll have to learn and follow them before trying for a QSL from the concerned stations. Otherwise, all attempts will go in vain. At the end, I would like to say, my QSL hunter friends, that we are all like honeybees in the worldwide DX garden. Radio stations are scattered around like blooming flowers. Our endeavor is to collect a drop of honey, which means a QSL, from each of those flowers. It's not an easy task. We'll have to try hard and overcome all challenges. Only then our beehive will be filled with sweet honey and we'll have enjoyment. That article by Pradip Chandra Kundu appears in the July issue of the Asian DX Review from the Indian DX Club International, which also has a long article about the 30th anniversary of WRMI, for which we thank them very much. Let's go to Henry Umatai now in the Philippines with his DX report.
Hello everyone, to dear shortwave listeners wherever you are, welcome to the July 14th edition of the Philippine DX. It's report number 208. I'm Henry Umatai in Bacolod City, Negros Occidental Central, Philippines. Glad to be back and thank you for listening. I would like to thank our DXer friends for sending their reception report most recently, Mr. Richard Lemke in Alberta, Canada, Mr. Eugene Corniken in Moscow, Russia, Mr. Marco Lasatin in San Fernando, Pampanga here in the Philippines, and Mr. John Zachary Alvarez in Cavite here also in the Philippines. To all of you, thank you very much. Reception lags for June 2024. June 9, FEBC 1 Rachel on 9275 in Chinese from Bukawi at 1037 SIO 333. June 9, BBC World Service on 9410 in English from Tinang at 1040 SIO 333. June 16, KNLS World Christian Broadcaster on 9580 in English from Angkor Point at 1041 SIO 444. June 16, KBS World Radio on 9770 in English from Kim J at 0850 SIO 444. June 23, Hope Radio on 9965 in English from Palau Midorn at 1049 SIO 333. June 23, Voice of Korea on 11710 in Korean from Kuchang at 1050 SIO 323. June 23, China Radio International on 11905 in English from Jinhua at 10:56 SIO 555. The following reception information from our DXR friend Mark Lasatin in San Fernando, Pampanga, the Philippines. He heard the following stations. June 5, KBS World Radio on 15265 in Russian from Wolverton, UK at 18:49 SIO 444. June 5, BOA Diwa on 12:035 in Pasto from Lampertheim, Germany at 18:56 SIO 322. June 5, Radio Romania International on 11975 in Romanian from Galbini, Bacau, Romania at 18:57 SIO 232. And June 5, All India Radio on 9620 in Arabic from Bengaluru at 18:59 SIO 333. Send us your comments, suggestions, reception links, and informations to PilipinasDX@gmail.com. That's PILIPINASDX for PilipinasDX@gmail.com. This has been Henry Umadhay for Wavescan in Bacolod City, Negros Occidental Central, Philippines. Ay mabuhay at maraming salamat po.
Thank you, Henry. Recently, we told you about the new e-book edition of the World Radio TV Handbook, but we forgot to tell you the price. It's $29.90 U.S., and you can order it at shop, that's S-H-O-P, dot radiodatacenter.net. Again, that's shop, S-H-O-P, dot radiodatacenter.net. From the WRTH's Club Spotlight, we have information about one of the oldest radio clubs in North America. Many of you who listen to this program are shortwave DXers, but I'm sure some of you are medium-wave DXers as well. Medium-wave DXers are those who try to hear long-distance stations on the medium-wave or AM band. And there's a club for medium-wave DXers. The International Radio Club of America is a group of 200-plus radio hobbyists in the United States, Canada, and overseas. Members of the IRCA tune the AM broadcast band, 540 to 1700 kilohertz, in search of distant radio signals. Membership in the IRCA is open to anyone interested in this fascinating hobby. The primary advantage of IRCA membership is being able to receive DX Monitor, the club's official email news bulletin, which comes out in PDF and text formats. DX Monitor is published 35 times a year. A year's worth of DX Monitor amounts to several hundred pages of valuable and interesting information on medium-wave radio stations and DX listening. A typical issue of DX Monitor has three main features: DX Roundup, DX Forum, and DX Worldwide. In DX Roundup, members report on their latest receptions of U.S. and Canadian stations. In DX Forum, members discuss their recent DXing activities, receiving equipment, radio stations, and other topics of general interest. In DX Worldwide, members report their most recent receptions of foreign medium wave stations. Surprisingly, a great number of countries in all continents except Antarctica can be heard on medium wave in North America. IRCA even has a tropical band column for those members that have an interest in that band. Several other features appear in DX Monitor every month or two. Broadcasting information lists the latest call letters, frequency, power, format, and network changes for U.S. and Canadian stations, as well as information on new and proposed stations. The IRCA technical column keeps you posted on new receiving equipment, construction projects, receiver modifications, and the use of receiving accessories. Some of the material in a DXer's technical guide originally appeared in that column. Verification signers lists recent verifications, or QSLs, received by club members. DX Worldwide 2 highlights foreign stations and includes a wealth of information on schedules, slogans, and new stations. Other items appear when submitted by members who are encouraged to share their knowledge within DX Monitor. The club issues achievement awards to those who have verified certain number of stations, states, and provinces or countries. A special courtesy programs committee arranges special late-night DX programs with cooperating radio stations, enabling DXers to hear stations that they might not be able to hear otherwise. IRCA members are entitled to discounts on club publications. IRCA members include some of the friendliest and most interesting people you would ever want to meet. Club members regularly hold local and regional get-togethers, details of which are announced ahead of time in DX Monitor. The club holds an annual convention attended by members from all over North America. The International Radio Club of America has a democratic form of government, with the president, secretary, treasurer, and board of directors elected every 2 years. All club officers, editors, and committee members serve on a volunteer basis. Membership dues are used to pay for clerical upkeep of our membership list. And membership is only $5, $5 US, to join, and $0 thereafter. So $5 for a lifetime membership. If you would like to join the IRCA, or if you'd like more information about the club, go to their website, www.ircaonline.org. That's www.ircaonline.org. And thanks to the World Radio TV Handbook for that club spotlight. Thanks for listening to WaveScan, the international DX program from Adventist World Radio. Researched and written in Indianapolis by Adrian Peterson and in Los Angeles by Ray Robinson. Next week on the program, we'll look at radio in Albania and our Bangladesh DX report. WaveScan is heard weekly on KSDA in Guam, AWR relays in various locations, WRMI in Florida, WWCR in Tennessee, Voice of Hope Africa in Zambia, and IRRS Italy. Send reception reports directly to the station you're listening to. Reports for KSDA and other AWR sites should go to qsl@awr.org. Other correspondence, not reception reports, can be sent to wavescan@yahoo.com. I'm Jeff White at WRMI Shortwave in Okeechobee, Florida. Till next week, good listening, everyone.